Support for KSJD's streaming comes from Osprey PAX, independent since 1974, setting the standard for creating and producing innovative, high-quality, caring equipment designed to inspire and ease your journey. Osprey PAX is committed to the local communities where it operates and to protecting the wild places its customers love to explore. For more information, visit OspreyPAX.com.
This is Canyon Chronicles, where we talk about archaeology, history, and the cultures of this place. I'm Mike Woodrow, and I'll be your host today. Today, our special guest is Dave Dove. Dave is an archaeologist and the principal investigator at the Mitchell Springs and Champaign Springs Community Archaeological Areas. The Mitchell Springs area is located just south and west of modern Cortez, and has played an important area, important part in the development of this area since prehistoric times. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Mike.
Dave, maybe you could set the stage for us. Tell us a little bit about the history of Mitchell Springs.
Well, Mitchell Springs has a very long history. When settlers got here in the 1860s, it was already a trading post at the spring there, where Ute and Navajo Indians would come and trade with the early settlers, and it was a sheep area there, lots of sheep pens in the area. It was the best water around and for a long distance. And the original town of Mitchell Springs, also known as Toltec, there was a post office sanctioned there, got started in the early 1880s, I believe, and it was slowly abandoned as Cortez moved up on top of the hill, and those buildings just sort of went away through time.
Tell us a little bit about the work you've been doing over the past 23 years. It's quite a series of sites.
Yes, this community was huge. It actually was probably in line with the size of modern-day Cortez. It spread out over the course of over two square miles, actually. And the center of the community is at the top of the hill to the south and west of the springs. And the center of the community is where you find some of the publicly built buildings. That whole site really started to ramp up in the early to mid-700s, and it went really strong until the early 1200s when that entire community, in fact, most of the bottom of the Montezuma Valley was abandoned at around 1225. Several hundred years before things started to pick up. We do find some Hopi trade wares. There was obviously some missions that they come up for hunting or to visit shrines that they had up here. They would come up to the area and leave some pottery. And so we know that they were here in the 1400s, 1500s. There was some pottery actually found underneath the top of Cortez up here from the Jedito yellow series of potteries.
I believe that there are several great kivas and one great house at least. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. There's actually a couple of places in the valley that have a similar configuration, and insofar as great houses go, there were four great houses at Mitchell Springs. There are also four great houses, or there were, at the Lakeview community over there by Totten Lake. There were also other public buildings, such as road features. There was a great kiva. There was what's called a court kiva. It's common inside Chaco great houses or around them. Special kind of kiva. It's over 10 meters in diameter, so it's a big kiva as well. And lots of features in the fields that were used to get water out of the drainages and put them up on the mesas. So when you look from Cortez and you look to the south toward Mesa Verde today, the fields that you see that are green and being farmed are probably the same fields that were farmed centuries ago.
Wow. The you mentioned on your website, which we'll come to in a minute, that there were large pit structures, and that I think in one case, over one of the larger pit structures, in later times there was a kiva built. Does that mean these are different people or just different times? Or
I believe that pattern is indicative of not ancestor worship, but an effort to tie to their ancestors. Could be possibly land transfers, which were really important. To have productive land obviously allows you to grow food, and when growing food is a difficult proposition, the best fields are going to be taken first, and those are probably the fields that converged around the Mitchell Springs area. There's six major drainages that meet the McElmo Creek right in that area, and so it provided an excellent opportunity for farming, flood irrigation farming particularly.
Who were the folks at Mitchell Springs, or who were the sets of folks at Mitchell Springs?
Well, they're related to modern Pueblo Indians, ancestral Puebloans, as another term that we use. And we're not sure exactly. They all didn't go to the same place. So they undoubtedly, when they left here just around 1300 or just before, they probably dispersed in many different directions. But there are some hypotheses that say they went to the Rio Grande Pueblos, and some that say they went down to the Hopi. I'm sure they went to numerous places, undoubtedly. But one thing's for sure, they never came back permanently.
Well, of all the work you've done so far, up until very recently, are there one or two things that really stand out that are unusual?
I think there are. What we've found at Champagne Spring and Mitchell Springs is a pattern that repeats itself throughout the world. As I mentioned earlier, this pattern of building on top of ancestors' houses. There's a meaning to that. We don't quite understand what it is, but it is a worldwide pattern. If you wanted to break it down, generally speaking, it comes down to a sign of reverence or a sign of dominance. In this case, I believe they revere their ancestors. It's not a sign of trying to put your building on top of somebody else's building that had a lot of meaning to them. So I consider it a sign of reverence. We see lots of that. We see this pattern of what I call structure sacrifice. There's a history of offerings throughout the historic Pueblos. You can read all kinds of ethnographic writings on offerings at shrines and elsewhere. So I can tell you some more about that.
That's great. We're going to take a quick break now. This is Mike Woodrow with KSJD talking with Dave Dove. Back in a minute. And we're back. This is Mike Woodrow talking with Dave Dove about 23 years plus work at Mitchell Springs Archaeological Group. Dave, before the break, we were talking about some of the more interesting things you found over the last 23 years.
Sure. I was starting to tell you a little bit about the process of offerings that we find. It's something I've been talking about and writing about for a long time. In fact, I'm working on a paper right now. Hope to have it out next year about that particular topic. What we find is that offerings of many different kinds were made. Out at Champagne Spring, there were two structures that were clearly loaded with offerings. One of them had over 50 animals that were sacrificed. Another one had about 40. A lot of turkeys, a lot of dogs, rattlesnake, squirrel, a bunny, different things, but they're making offerings of things that are valuable to them, so, like structures, for instance. Nearly their entire turkey crop, that would have been an offering. Out at Mitchell Springs recently, we've been working on a large pit structure that had the same ending, where they deliberately set piles of accelerants on fire at the bottom. And before they did, they set up everything in this to be, as I interpret it, to be balanced with their cosmology. They have clear cardinal directions noted in this structure. And when they burned it, they left literally all of what would have been valuable to them, such as basketfuls of very large ears of corn, which I don't even see today in the modern pueblos that size, pipes and ceramic vessels and all kinds of things. It was very obviously a sacrifice, and we find that in several different places out there at Mitchell Springs.
Are you finding new finds as a result of the same processes you've used over time, or is there additional new technology that you're using today?
Well, we've a friend of mine who's been a research associate for about 20 years now from Eastern Illinois University, their GIS department owns a professional level unmanned aerial vehicle, and it has some incredible technologies that we've combined with GIS. It gives us the ability to take angled photographs and tie it into the grid, what we call the UTM grid, Universal Transverse Mercator, I think is how that works out. But it allows archaeologists to have complete control over their sites, and with the use of this drone, we've mastered a way to completely take out the distortion and give us survey-grade maps that allow archaeologists to save a lot of time in the field, and that's what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we've been trying to incorporate some new technologies to save people time in the field and increase accuracy.
Are there images that are available to the public from this work so far?
You could go to the website fourcornersresearch.com. That's one word, or plus a comma and a com. Research in Four Corners Research. Four is spelled out. And there's lots of different photographs on there and different projects that we're working on now that we have open to the public, actually.
And the images coming from the drones, will they be available at some time?
There's going to be some YouTube connections to some of these videos that we've taken. They're all full high-definition videos, so they're spectacular images. And we can hover this drone right over the top of things and take out the distortion by creating a grid and taking lots of photographs across the high-distortion areas. So, yes, to answer your question, they will be visible to the public at the website.
What are your most recent discoveries that you'd like to share?
We've been working on a small section of the site. It's about 250 square meters, where there was 500 years of occupation from approximately 700 to 1225. And what we're looking at is just this superpositioning of structures built on top of structures on top of structures. And we've recently been looking at a tri-wall structure that's out there. There's not very many of these known. And it basically has three walls, and in the center of it, it has a kiva that was in the Chacoan style. And it was also built inside a 10th century tower, which they deliberately tried to resurrect and keep it holding up by building the tri-wall. So we found out that the tri-wall was not set out. People that built it did not set out to build a drywall. It just ended up that way.
Just ended up
yes.
That way. Right. And you say there's not many of those around. And very few, on your website, didn't you mention something about very few of them being outside of government management?
There's, to my knowledge, there's only the Mitchell Springs one is on private land. There's the other ones, I believe, are on publicly managed lands, and the last one that was tested was in the 50s. And pretty modern technologies and recording techniques were used, but they really never got to the bottom of what these things were. And mm-hmm. we set out to do a little more documentation to try to uncover what these are and why they are.
And being on private land, does that give you greater access or more time to work on the site?
It gives me access to the materials without having to do a lot of the paperwork that comes with trying to access materials. It allows me to set up my own excavation plans without having to coordinate with too many groups of people.
David, you mentioned your website. Would you tell our listeners again where they can go for additional information or photographs of the work you've done?
By all means. It's fourcornersresearch.com, and four is spelled out.
Okay. And I believe the Pecos Conference begins this weekend. Will you be at the Pecos Conference?
Yes, I have a talk that I'll give there at 10:45 in the morning tomorrow, and then we'll have a poster presentation at the same time on Saturday, I believe, and that will deal with the use of our drone and the mapping technologies that we're trying to develop.
That'll be very interesting.
Yes, sure,
a lot of our folks will see it. Wonderful. Well, I want to thank our guest today, Dave Dubb, for sharing about the archaeology beneath our feet. I'd also like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. Special thanks as well, and as always, to Southern Colorado Canyons Alliance. Let me try that again. Southwest Colorado Canyons Alliance. There, I got it. For supporting the richness and depth of the experience here in the canyon country, and for getting Canyon Chronicles up and running. Please check with us at ksjd.org/canyonchronicles for additional links to some of the materials that Dave has spoken about today. And this is Mike Woodrow saying goodbye until next time on Canyon Chronicles, which will be 8:30 Thursday, September 3rd. Thanks.